bottles. So much to plunder that I think I'll sleep instead. I don't know this. See in neon, thousands sunburned with Cyprian in big nights back east with Rhoda.
Little Lamb Knife.
Yes.
I'm Michelle Branch. And you are Vanessa Carlton. And we are a podcast about movies called Little Lamb Knife.
It's called Human Rights. It's the 90s.
We are... I'm fixing my microphone here. I'm turning off the tape player and all of that Rufus Wainwrighting that you just... gave us, and
what was that grunt for?
It's fine.
All right,
it's fine. It's not other stuff that you play. It's fine. So, again, yes, linoleum knife. Even we can't pronounce the name of our own podcast.
Marketing.
Linoleum Knife is a podcast about films. Featuring Alonzo Duralde of TheRap.com and What the Flick, which is on the internet, and that's you.
And
you're the Alonzo Duralde.
And you are Dave White of Movies.com.
Movies.com. And this is what we do here with the we talk about films.
Yes.
Let's begin doing that right now.
Yes.
Here's why so many things have happened. The world is a different place.
What are you talking about? The gay basketball player?
No, I don't care about that.
Oh.
I mean, okay, sure, I do. I guess. You know, here's the thing. When famous people, when people who are well-known out in the world, and they're all like, hey, everybody, guess what? I'm gay. I just think, sure, great. We're glad that you have made everything public now. That's nice.
That's kind of glib.
It's not glib. I just don't care about anything.
I don't think we have to care about this guy's personal life.
But no, I don't. I think
we have to care about the fact that this is...
It's a good thing. It is a good thing that he did it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know he didn't say it like that. He didn't go, hey, everybody.
Yeah, no. Stomp you flat.
Oh, just, he's tall. That's all. That's it. Tallness. I'm scrappy.
You're not even scrappy. You're a weeble.
I'm doughy. You can get stuck in all my dough.
There you go.
No, I don't mean to sound glib, obviously. It's just, it's not a thing that, it just kind of, you know, washes over.
No, I mean, obviously, really sports is not a thing that about I care
it,
about.
Not sports, not celebrities of any sort. When they come out, I just don't actually care.
But these are, you know, this is a cultural moment.
It is a cultural moment. I should care about the cultural moment, I guess. But just last week, a WNBA player came out, and everybody was like, shrug. So
I think it's kind of a... It's usually when a WNBA player winds up being, like, a heterosexual that people seem more surprised.
In any case, I think it's a gay male bias that exists in the culture. I think, you know, the people who love gays and hate gays are obsessed with the same thing: gay dudes.
Well,
and lesbians. Think, like, lesbians somehow carry no cultural weight.
Well, because women, that to Ellen.
Because women don't, like, people don't value what women do.
Okay, there might be some underlying misogyny there, but I think
it is misogyny.
But specifically in the world of sports, I think that women who engage in sport are thought to be masculine, whatever that means, and so it's less of a shock when it turns out that they're also lesbians.
Whereas, all right, the reason I said the world was different is because I found these raspberry-filled cookies this week at the British food shop that I've been really wanting to get.
Well, you need to explain these things up front.
Well, I was fixing to, and then you preempted me with gay basketball.
Sorry.
Raspberry custard creams inside two cookies. So good with tea.
I was going to say, this sounds like it's part of a nice cup of tea.
The world's different. Like I say, my world is different now.
Yeah, I'm sure we all remember where we were when we first heard about the raspberry custard cookies. They'll be reenacting on Mad Men decades later.
Again, When it happens in the world, I don't care. When it happens to me...
In your big fat belly.
It's a monumental shift in the world.
Right.
Yeah.
That's like the Mel Brooks line. You know, tragedy is when I get a paper cut. Comedy is when you fall down a manhole and die.
Exactly. So, that's a thing that happened.
Okay.
And it happened while you were out of town. So,
yes.
I was alone, and it felt even more... Wait, someone's calling me. Why is anyone... Who's calling me? Stop calling me.
You've really got to learn how to turn off your ringer. I don't think that's too much to ask.
I just rejected the call.
Okay, fine.
Yeah,
I leave town and you're eating new cookies, so...
Yeah.
I don't even know you anymore.
I had to experience this alone.
Mm.
It was, you know... It's not as fun to experience these things alone. Well, I need you by me.
Beside you,
yes,
to guide you.
So, you were out of town at the USA Film Festival, and you wore suits.
I did,
and people told you how great you looked,
which you bring up only because you like.
I helped you. Yes, I helped you do it. I helped you pick neckties.
Mapped my wardrobe for the week. So, yes, well done, Dave White.
Thank you.
You've won again.
Plus the cookies. It's been a pretty triumphant. 7 days.
Your chest is all puffed up.
Yeah.
I was at the USA Film Festival, which is always fun. I used to program that festival, and I'm still a consultant there, so it's always fun to go back every year and do stuff and see things. And they had a lot of really amazing movies this year. I got to do a Q&A with David Gordon Green.
Right.
Who, it turns out,
yes,
used to work the concession stand at the AMC Glen Lakes in Dallas, where we used to have the festival.
Which means that he sold me Junior Mints at
exactly.
one point
yeah.
in his life.
I know, and he was talking about how, you know, when he started going to the film festival, seeing movies like Heathers and Paper House, and that was 89, that was my
right.
first film festival.
Yes.
So we were both in that theater, and he would become a big deal, and I would not.
You're a big deal.
But he was very nice.
And me.
He was wearing this sort of light kind of blue denim-y shirt, you know, with a white T-shirt under it. And then when we started the Q&A, he unbuttoned the outer shirt to show that he was wearing the T-shirt from the 1992 festival, which he stole out of a box at the theater.
Excellent.
Which I thought that was very cool. That's a bringing it around again moment I've never had at the film festival
the
before.
The lesson is...
Be nice to the concession people.
Also,
what?
Stealing is good.
Because it'll be an anecdote later.
Right. Later on, when you become the famous director of Your Highness, you will say, look what I stole when I was young.
Hey, yeah, that's not the one I would have gone to. But so, yeah, his new movie's called Prince Avalanche, and it has Paul Rudd and Emile Hirsch, and we'll be talking about it when it opens later this year.
But and I liked it a lot.
And it's funny because before it started, Mr. Green said that it was sort of brings together the two different strains of his movies, the sort of, you know, quiet lyricism of you know, George Washington and Undertow, but then the sort of, you know, outrageous humor of you know, Pineapple Express and, you know, Your Highness. And I thought, well, that what's that look like? And it's what he's done.
It looks good.
Yeah, it's amazing. So,
well, you know, All the Real Girls was quite funny.
Mm, I need to go back and watch that one.
And so, it definitely was, it had that George Washington vibe,
uh-huh.
but it also had weird, funny stuff going on.
I had forgotten that he's actually worked with Malick. Like, Malick actually executive produced Undertow.
Did he?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, you know.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And then the second night I saw The Way, Way Back, which was written and directed by Jim Rash and Nat Faxon,
yes.
whom you know from TV's Community and Ben and Kate, respectively, but also they won an Oscar for The Descendants.
Yes.
For co-writing it with Alexander Payne.
Right.
And I like that one a lot, too. I'm a sucker for That Was the Summer That Changed Everything movies. And this is That Was the Summer That Changed Everything movie.
So when they make a movie about this past week, the week that changed everything.
Right, when you found the raspberry
cookies. When I found
the cookies
that I was really, really looking forward to finding. Who will star in that film? Who will direct it? Will David Gordon Green direct my cookie week?
Will it be set in McDonaldland?
Sure.
Could you be played by, you know, Mayor McCheese, perhaps? Coming out of retirement?
I do like Mayor McCheese. I like Mayor McCheese, and I really love the Hamburglar.
Yeah, but his speaking skills aren't the greatest.
Neither are mine.
Yeah, but even you say more than rubble, rubble, rubble. It barely seems like it
sometimes. Only once a week or so.
But, you know, sometimes in the movies you have to amplify, and so they might want someone else. Anyway, just a quick rundown of stuff. Our friend Joey O'Brien, who is, you know, a big hotshot Hong Kong movie writer.
Yeah.
Which I still find fascinating, because he doesn't speak a word of, like, of Cantonese or Mandarin.
Right, but he's awesome.
But, yeah, he's very talented. And a
good writer and stuff.
And, you know, he's from Carrollton, so it was fun to have him back in Dallas and show one of his movies, and yeah, I got to do some Q&A with him, which was a gas. I met Susan Seidelman.
Did you really?
Yes.
Why was she there?
She has a new movie. It's called The Hot Flashes, and it's about a group of middle-aged women that form a basketball team to raise money to save the breast cancer screening mobile
device. I think I've seen a trailer for this somewhere.
You might have written about it for this stuff, because it's got there's a lesbian character.
Oh, all right. Was Madonna there?
She was not. Madonna, as it turns out, they just did a big anniversary screening of Desperately Seeking Susan.
Yes.
In New York at Lincoln Center, whole cast was there. Madonna was supposed to come. Her people said she would be there. Didn't show up.
No word. No warning. Nothing. Nope. Didn't even show.
Just shined it on.
What's her deal?
What indeed is Madonna's deal? That's a thesis waiting to be written. What's Madonna's deal?
What's she got going on that makes her too fancy to go to a
beats me
thing like that?
But anyway, so Susan Seidelman, very cool, the indie film legend. You know, I said she comes from the period that I call post Cassavetes, pre Sundance.
Right.
Turns out, Smithereens, one of the first American.
There's a whole lot of noise going on outside right now.
One of the first American.
Sorry, listeners. Yes. It's garbage truck day.
What? Smithereens was one of the first American indie movies to get admitted and selected for the Cannes Film Festival.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And also, Seidelman directed the Sex and the City pilot.
The pilot, you say?
Yeah.
That's a nice little income right there.
That's a sweet gig, yeah. For those of you who don't know, if you're in the Directors Guild, and I guess you pretty much would have to be to get this job.
Right.
If you direct the pilot of a series and it goes.
And goes and goes.
Well, if it gets picked up, you get some sort of kickback for every single new episode that is produced.
Yeah.
So if you, you know, are, say, Bryan Singer, and you directed the pilot of House.
Is that what he did?
Yeah. Oh, he was also executive producer of that show. But in addition to that income, he also gets a nice check from the Directors Guild for...
I'm going to go direct a...
pilot.
A successful pilot.
Yeah.
If anyone is out there who's a director and would like to tell me how to do that...
just be careful.
I'm willing.
Be careful how you describe
I'm willing to put in a super half-assed effort.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which is... For television, you know. Actually, TV's good now. It's the movies that are so lame. I love that story about, I think it's Mick Jackson, the British director who got held up at customs and at LAX because they asked him what he was doing in America, and he said, "I'm here to shoot a pilot."
Right.
Yeah.
Use your words.
Exactly. I know I'm going to be forgetting stuff because I don't have the schedule in front of me, but a lot of good movies. At closing night, there was a fun movie called Bottled Up, which is about the battle between the corporate Dr. Pepper and Dublin Dr. Pepper.
Yes.
The Dublin plant, which was one of the original bottling plants, and they were sort of a brand unto themselves, and the big company got all mean about it.
Because that was smart of them.
Yeah, exactly. Nothing like
that made people happy.
Nothing like crushing the livelihood of a small Texas town to really, you know, make your company look swell. But anyway, it was a fun experience, and you know, our friend Sandra Luco was there, and she was on the jury again this year, and she's working on an interesting documentary about her brother. And anyway, so it was great. If you are in the Dallas area, if you've never been to the USA Film Festival, you should totally go. It is one of the oldest film festivals in the country. This was their 43rd this year, and it's a great festival. And you know, they always bring in a lot of great guests and cool indie flicks. And, you know,
so we both had a pretty full week.
Yeah, pretty much. I talked to David Gordon Green, and you ate raspberry cookies.
Yeah, so we'll make sure to get a picture of that up on the Facebook page. People are gonna super love that.
Just don't eat with your mouth full.
I always eat with my mouth full.
I mean, you know what I'm saying.
I don't know what you're saying.
Don't have your mouth open while it's full. If there's going to be a picture of it on the left.
Do you like seafood?
Exactly. Classy. Okay, so there's way too many movies this week, and there's not many next week because of nobody wants to open opposite Iron Man 3.
Right.
So we are going to save Mira Nair's The Reluctant Fundamentalist.
Which is boring
and
not good.
Spoiler. and Ramin Barani's At Any Price until next week.
Which is boring and not good.
Although I just realized now that ruins my DVD pick, so I'll have to know something else. But I'll figure it out.
What's your DVD pick?
It was going to be Chop Shop, but I'll save it for next week. So I'll come up with something else this week.
Why was Chop Shop going to be your...
Chop Shop, Ramin Barani's movie.
Oh, that's right.
Well, okay, fine. I guess Chop Shop is my DVD
it
pick.
It should be.
Thanks,
yeah,
Dave White.
I'm sorry. I'm being dumb.
Yes. Aren't you just...
Unlike me to be dumb, but I'm being it right now. We are going to talk about Pain and Gain right now.
Well, you are. I didn't have to see it.
Speaking of dumb.
So I didn't see it.
If you've seen the trailer, you know, I think even if you haven't seen the trailer, you know what this is about. It's
right.
Based on a true story
right.
of real actual murders that took place in Florida, of course. committed
it's always
by,
Florida or Texas.
committed by three bodybuilding meatheads who are idiots. They have a get-rich-quick scheme, and they don't care how they get it. Mark Wahlberg, Anthony Mackie, and The Rock.
Dwayne Johnson.
Whatever. They target a rich guy, played by Tony Shalhoub, and his crime is being rich and not having awesome muscles and being mean to people.
How dare he?
So he should die. And... apparently, in real life, the guy they stole the money from is a little shady, or he was a little shady, but not this reprehensible human being.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just, I mean, based on what I've read.
Garden variety scumbag.
Garden variety scumbag, but not, you know, not the kind of person who goes and just treats people horribly and stuff like that. But Tony Shalhoub's character in this movie is so gross. That when they start torturing him, and they do for 30 days.
Oh, God.
That you just think, well, okay, you've been mean, so...
guess you should have tipped that waiter.
You deserve to be strung upside down and placed on a dry cleaning rotating hanger, you know.
Right.
You deserve to, you know, have your eyes pried open. You know, these crazy, terrible things.
And this is a comedy.
It is a comedy.
I'm laughing already.
Because of everybody being dummies or stupid or gross. I guess dummy and stupid is the same thing.
I was about to ask. Okay, yes, go on.
Synonyms. Mm-hmm. And Michael Bay loves to...
Known for his Lubitsch-esque touch.
Stand above all of these people and point at them and go, ha ha ha, you're gross and stupid and awful. And
also poor.
Yeah, and you're poor. And if you're poor, you should just be content with your lot in life. He actually said this in an interview. Michael Bay said this in a Junket interview that the moral of the story is be happy with what you have. And I'm like, I don't think that's the moral of the story. The moral of the story is don't murder people and chop them up.
Now, pardon me while this Playboy actress fondles me in my Jaguar.
Do we know this?
I'm just, you know.
Is this the thing? Is he not a married dude with
a
family?
I don't know.
That he loves very much and doesn't cheat on with Playboy model
I think
ladies?
He might be a not quite garden variety scumbag, but I'm not entirely sure.
Who knows? Who knows what Michael Bay actually is? But here's what I do
know. It turns
out
he's not the illegitimate son of John Frankenheimer, which was the gossip for a while.
Here's what Michael Bay is. He's the director I want to direct films about Bad Boys and about space robots. Those are the films I want him to make. I want him to make those movies. I want him to keep making those movies. There can be a new Transformers movie every 2 years for the rest of my life, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm.
I like watching the space robots fight. I like everything about the space robots.
You will never.
You do not like the space robots. I love the space
robots. I love the space robots in theory. I don't love it when Michael Bay makes crazy amounts of ones and zeros on the screen that are screaming at my eyes.
I'm okay with that.
All right.
What I'm not okay with is when he treats human beings like space robots and thinks that he's made a small, personal, intimate film. In my review for movies.com, I said, what if you gave Vanessa Hudgens' character and Ashley Benson's character in Spring Breakers film cameras and said, go make a movie. This is the movie they would make. This is a stupid movie about stupid people.
For stupid people.
With no smart ideas in it.
Yeah.
And no soul, no compassion, no heart, no nothing. Everyone who dies in this film at the hands of these criminals, they are painted as sort of deserving of their fate. It is the most tin-eared, cold-brained thing that I have seen in months. It's rotten. There are funny lines in the film. They are almost all in the trailer. Except there's a good running gag about what a notary is and how a notary functions and how a paper, how something gets notarized.
And they don't understand it.
And nobody understands what it means to be a notary and what it means to get something notarized. So that's kind of an ongoing gag that's actually funny.
I see.
See, now but everything else is repulsive.
As soon as once you say directed by Michael Bay, I'm out. Yep. You know, surprise me one day, but it hasn't happened yet.
Right.
If you, as someone who somehow likes the Transformers movies,
yes.
thinks this movie is garbage,
it is garbage.
Then it must be garbage.
It is super garbage.
Oh, I have two other quick
topped with a sprinkle of poop.
Ah, yeah. There we go. I have two other USA Film Festival like celeb moments to share, and then I'll press on. Stephen Tobolowsky was there, the man who is in everything.
Yes.
And I had to introduce him, and so we were sort of standing off on the side of the theater. I said, I have one nerd question for you.
Yes.
He goes, all right, we have it. I said, what was your draft of True Stories like?
Yeah.
Because he and Beth Henley co-wrote, it's like it says, you know, Stephen Tobolowsky and Beth Henley, and David Byrne. And he said, well, you know, we wrote, we had like 17 days or something crazy to turn it around.
Wow.
And then David went away for 6 months.
Yes.
And he came back and he said, yeah, well, it's kind of different now. I don't know that you'll really, you know, recognize anything. So they just figured, okay, well, fine, whatever. You know, our name's on it. And then he goes, and then we saw the movie. And actually, like, we, you know, those are our characters. Pretty much he took out, like, we had story arcs.
Right.
And there was like another character they came up with that wasn't in there, but pretty much like they came up with, you know, the lying woman and the lazy woman and the,
right.
you know, the preacher and all that stuff. That's yes. So that was cool. Also there was a lady I have still not gotten to spend nearly enough time with, but from the times we have spent together, like doing the Spirit Award stuff, I just find her super enchanting. The Radiant Shore Agdashlu was there.
She was there again?
Yeah.
For USA?
She was there for USA.
Now, okay, I know you served on the jury with her for the Spirit Awards.
Right.
Did you just say that, and was I spacing and not listening?
Yes.
Okay, that's totally what I do sometimes.
Okay. Were you thinking about cookies?
Did she? Maybe.
Okay. Fine. Did she what?
Did she remember you?
She didn't.
I mean, there are some mnemonics going on with your head.
Yes.
From the neck up, you're pretty.
I like to
you're
think
pretty recognizable.
I'm making it easy for people. The
salt and pepper, bushy face beard, and the glasses on your head also. And did you compliment her again on her outfits?
I didn't even really get a chance to.
Because I think that's how you won her.
I think so. Yeah. We saw each other very much in passing, but it was very, you know. Good to see you again.
You know, so you made out with her, is what you're...
Yes, I totally made out with Shorty Agdashlu. It was hot.
Did you tell her, this has never happened to me before?
Dear Penthouse.
I'm a double gold star gay, really.
She is...
Actually, you're not a double gold star gay.
No?
No, because you have in the past, in your college life... You made out with a girl.
I made out with a girl.
Yeah.
That was it.
That disqualifies you from double gold star status.
Okay, but I'm still a single gold star.
There's a gold star gay, which means you've never done
it yes.
with a lady.
Right.
But double gold star is means that you've never even like so much as kissed a, someone of the opposite sex.
Who becomes double even like
get nope.
Who?
Up until very recently, and I can't name names.
Oh, I know who you're going to say. Okay.
Up until very recently, and I cannot name names.
Because I'm thinking
even... One of our adult male friends,
yes,
who's
know,
like 40 years old,
I know who you mean.
Was a double gold star until the Christmas office party.
Whoa.
When the drunken lady coworker
yeah.
said to him, "You've never even made out with a woman?" And he said, "Nope." And she said, "Come here." And they went under a stairwell. And he made out with her. And his story to me was... It was kind of fun. and then later he said, but I never want to do that again. Like, it felt weird and creepy and strange, and I never want to do that again.
Yeah,
but
well,
she was into it.
Well, you know, I because I think that even the kids coming out in high school now are still, like, making out with girls just because why not?
Who knows?
You know?
Maybe they are.
I have to say, I mean, I made out with a girl in college, and I went out with a guy not very long thereafter, so... Make of that what you will.
So Shorey Agdashlu didn't even, like...
There was no tongue.
There
no.
was no...
She's a classy lady.
I'm not. Yes. So, anyway, this film, let's finish up Pain and Gain.
Oh, there was more? Okay.
Yeah, it thinks
I
it's a...
sprinkled with poop was sort of the final word. In there.
No, it thinks it's a satire.
Uh-huh.
It thinks it's a satire about greed and stupidity. But you can't be a satire...
And Michael Bay really has things to teach us about those things.
It can't be a satire about those things when it is those things.
Right.
You know.
Your stupid, greedy movie is not going to be...
Right. And the end.
The big wedding.
No more human beings in films, please, from Michael Bay. Only talking cars that stand up and have giant clanking balls and say hip-hop things.
Oh,
and then...
While John Turturro screams at them.
Right. And then buildings fall over and the snaky serpent robot machines go up. That. More of that.
Fine.
More of that all the time forever.
The big wedding. The big wedding.
I need to tell you a story before we talk about the big wedding.
Did you get what I was doing there?
What?
Remember the Big Valley? That TV show?
What about it?
That was what the ads were. It was like, the Big Valley, the Big Valley. And then the music would kick in, and Barbara Stanwyck would say, go ahead, show us some of Tom Barkley's guts. This is not ringing a bell for you at all?
I don't think I ever watched that show. All right, so I went to a press screening.
Oh, yes.
Of the big wedding.
Yes, I want to hear this story, because I was not around for this one. I paid money to see it in Dallas, so I missed the
And we've talked about this in the past. You know how much I love a good radio promotional screening.
Even without the t-shirt cannon.
Even without the t-shirt cannon. Now, in general, the radio promotional screenings are doled out to K-Rock and I'm blanking on whatever the hip-hop station is here in town.
Oh, right. Yes, that one.
Yeah. It's KROQ or it's the hip-hop station. Almost always.
Well, who did the What to Expect When You're Expecting one?
I don't remember. But this one was a radio promotional screening from the coast.
Coast 103.5.
Love songs at night. Abigail, Gustavo would like to dedicate Meatloaf's "I'll Do Anything for Love," but I won't do that.
No, you're doing it wrong.
I know we've been through a lot of hard times recently.
I just want you to
know
you've
been with me all through everything, so many ups and downs.
And even though I'm going to prison for tax fraud, I want you to know that you will always be in my thoughts. And now here's Paradise by the Dashboard Light for Abigail from Gustavo.
It's
they are the all Christmas station, though, in November, December, which I...
The tepid all Christmas station.
Yes, no, I know. Believe me.
Clay Aiken Christmas station.
Dream job? One of my dream jobs?
I know.
Program
We've
that station.
We've had this conversation. They should just hand the reins over to you. You'd be the best.
I would make it so awesome.
And I don't... I mean, under most circumstances, I don't trust your musical taste as far as I can bowl it down an alley. But
nor are you.
Christmas.
Yeah, step
you're,
back.
You're the boss.
First thing to go on that station, Gloria Estefan's "I Want to See Christmas in Your Eyes."
Yeah, I hate that song.
Out, yeah. Out. Yeah. They did at least get rid of the Christmas shoes, and I thank Patton Oswalt for that.
No, well, I as much as I appreciate Patton Oswalt's bit about the Christmas shoes, if the unintentional effect was to getting rid of the Christmas shoes, that's bad.
Ah, okay.
They need to always play the Christmas shoes
once an hour
because that song is maybe the greatest toxic thing that has ever been created,
holiday or otherwise,
with the Christmas label attached to it.
Anyway, we're getting off key here.
Coast was the
love songs.
Here's the thing about Coast.
Yes.
I'm kind of down for the Coast. If I'm driving, let's say
your favorite soft hits.
Let's say our friends Dave and Jason who live in the valley. Let's say I'm driving home from their house through the valley.
Right.
And, you know, you get an In-N-Out burger on your way home or whatever, and you're listening, you got the radio on, and they're playing, you know, they're playing Celine Dion or
Phil Collins.
Or Phil Collins in the air tonight, you know. They're playing something smooth and adult and contemporary.
Michael Bublé.
And you feel, in that moment, you feel very contemporary and adult and smooth yourself. And
Starship.
I'm into it. I, for 20 minutes.
Sure. You can be smooth.
Every few months, I can be smooth. Mm-hmm. So, when I saw that they were the sponsors of the screening, I was very excited. And
you thought maybe you'd get a Michael McDonald CD out of it?
I was actually hoping Michael McDonald would be there. And he was not. But they did have an on-air personality.
Okay.
And And here's what he was like.
Okay.
First of all, I don't remember his name, but he was terrific.
It wasn't Richard Zacharidis.
I don't remember his name.
It's the only one I can name, and I don't know if he's on there anymore.
But he kept welcoming people to the screening and saying, "Hey, we're going to get started here in about 10 minutes. I cannot wait to see this film."
My entire life up to this point has led to this moment.
And then, you know how they do contests?
Oh, yes.
Okay, such as...
Scream Real Loud.
Who has the Scream Real Loud contest, or the Do You Know the Alphabet contest. The hip-hop station is my favorite thing. The hip-hop station has the Do You Know the Alphabet contest.
Are you serious?
People screw it up all the time.
I thought you were kidding.
No, they get you down there. They get a line of people down there, and they say, name contemporary artists, musicians in alphabetical order.
Okay.
And so, like,
it's just not they can't think of somebody; they just get the order wrong.
They get they'll be like, name who's got a name with the letter C, and someone will say, Chris Brown. They do that all the time.
It's like when Mary Jo was a Kelly girl and one of her temp bosses asked her about her familiarity with the alphabet.
That is a real thing that really happens. And then, you know, there was the Last Exorcism 2 contest of who's got the craziest thing in their bag.
Oh, right.
And there was the lady with the purse full of fried chicken.
Well, because the Scream Real Loud, I was being serious.
That Scream Real Loud contest, that's a real thing too. Because
who doesn't want to hear that in the audience with a microphone?
Right. This was the Who's Been Married Longest contest.
Oh.
And there were people there who had been married for 49 years.
Wow.
And my thought was, if you've been married for 49 years, and this is what you're doing with your time, what little time you have left on this earth... Because if you've been married for 49 years, you're fixing to die.
Oh, now.
Soonish.
People are living longer and longer.
All right, yes, true. Time. We just got the National Geographic
that
showed the baby on the cover, and it said this baby will live to be 120.
Right.
But if you've already been married 50 years today, you ain't living to 120. that means you are at least
67.
60. And you are going to be old for a short amount of time, and then you're gone. But if you've been married 49 years, and your idea of wise use of time is going to see the big wedding, I want there to be a Proposition 8 against you. I want to vote on whether or not you're allowed to be married. People voted on whether you and I were allowed to be married. Yeah, so right. I want to be able to vote on other people's legitimate marriages.
Based on their use of
their free time.
I see.
If you are going to see movies like The Big Wedding after 50 years together, your marriage is a sham. Hmm. And I should be able to vote against it. That's what I think.
Fair enough.
Yes. Then there was a guy, then there was a lady who walked by the DJ and he was like, "Hey, are you married?" Like all the contests, all the discussion was about marriage.
Right. Sure.
And she's like, "Nope." And he was like, "Want to get married? Want to go to Vegas?" Like there was this weird, subtle conversation about, and this guy's already married. He was talking about, he's been married for over 20 years.
Right.
You know, and his wife, she puts up with me, like that kind of thing.
With my crazy radio personality. And
he wasn't a crazy radio personality.
Smooth.
He was smooth.
He was smooth.
He's like, "Want to go to Vegas?" And everyone was like, "Oh, ha, 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 we can go to Vegas." And I thought, that's, yes. Straight people can do whatever they want.
Because marriage is sacred.
You want to go to marriage? You want to go to Vegas? I want to go to Vegas, and I'm going to marry the first stripper that I meet.
Yeah.
And I can do that. Mm-hmm. So, okay. That was one thing that was going on. The other thing that was going on was free cake.
Well, hey now.
But they kind of had the free cake hidden. Uh-huh. It was in the lobby, in the little restaurant bar area of the lobby of the movie theater. Mm. And people were passing by the free cake and didn't realize that it was there. When he announced that there was free cake.
Oh, no.
In the lobby area, he said, "Oh, and it's so delicious. It's from this local bakery, and it's got chocolate-covered rice sprinkles on top. Don't everybody all go at once."
Oh, too late.
Boom. Every old person there, and it was a majority old people.
Right.
They all stood up, and they're like, out the door, like, like, it was in a mall, so they were power walking. They were mall power walking to the cake.
The geriatric Oklahoma land rush.
But here's what he said. He goes, "Don't everybody go at once. Maybe someone can go and get a few plates and, you know, pass them out. And we'll go on, you know, some cake run." Like, he was just trying to really smoothly control the crowd. Well, a few audience members decided that this was a good use of their time. And total strangers from the front of the audience, just random folks, came up to us and were like, "Does anybody want any cake? I'm going on a cake run."
Did you say yes?
No!
I have never known you to turn down free cake.
First of all,
I don't even know you anymore.
First of all.
With your new cookies and your no cakes.
I had recently eaten in the food court.
Uh-huh.
I had a Nutella crepe and I was full.
There's always room for free cake.
I was very full.
I see.
From my dinner of things in the food court.
Uh-huh. Did you go to the corn dog and a stick place?
Normally I don't turn down. No, Panda.
Okay.
Normally I don't turn down free cake, obviously.
With chocolate covered rice.
Yeah, but I was very full and I thought, don't be
Mr. Creosote.
The word you always use to describe me, grosero. Translate that word, please. Disgusting pig.
Basically, that works, right? Sure, yeah.
Grosero.
Yeah.
So I didn't. But what was wonderful was that these people, these do-gooding people, were like,
"May I fetch some cake for you?"
I'm going on a cake run. Who wants cake? People were like, "I do." He comes back with like five plates of cake. He's just distributing them to people.
Angels, one and all.
Meanwhile, there really is a cake stampede going on.
No, I'm like, sure.
I was expecting there to be actual, like,
cake violence.
Trampled to death. Yeah.
People with bits of frosting.
Yeah, yeah. The great cake stampede of the Landmark Cinemas in 2013. They, you know, the survivors, they record a benefit single of Ferry Cross the Mercy, you know, about it.
MacArthur Park.
Yeah. And But here's where it gets great.
Yeah, all I did was sneak a Starbucks into mine. Anyway, go on.
It hits 7:30. Uh-huh. And this is essentially a press screening.
Right.
Where they let in, you know, riffraff from apparently the Beverly Hills Women's Club. I'm just going to name the name.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Because I don't know anyone in the Beverly Hills Women's Club. There were two old ladies behind us. Three.
Oh, who expected this thing was going to start on time?
First of all, they thought it was going to start on time.
Hate to break it to you, Beverly Hills Women's Club. This never happens. Ever. We could be in a screening room with three people. They will not start on time.
They were convinced that it did happen because they had experienced on-time screenings in the past.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, that's funny. I've been writing about films for 14 years now, and there is no such thing as an on-time screening. No. They are always a minimum of 10 minutes after the time to account for late arriving journalists. That's always the way it works.
Who got caught in traffic.
Always the way it works. If it says 7:30, it starts at 7:40.
Yeah.
It might even start at 7:45.
Right.
In extreme circumstances, I've seen it start as late as 7:50.
Yeah.
But that's rare.
I've seen 7 o'clock screening start at 7:30.
Really?
Really.
When was that?
I'm sure someone very special was late.
The look in your eyes, I see the names of those people. You and I know who those people are.
Exactly.
There are some very special people who are
constantly
late. Sometimes some of them are constantly late. Others are just like
thoughtless
clock pushers. Mm-hmm. Like they'll show up at 7:27.
Right.
And wonder why there's no seats left in the reserved section for them.
Yes.
And then force publicists to remove people so that they can sit there. I've seen that happen too. So good.
Always a treasure.
It really is. I mean, it's what provides me with a lot of actual pleasure. Watching the personalities clashing and then the angriness and the just total rhubarbs going down.
Okay, so
these old ladies are the pushiest old women I have ever encountered in 14 years of living in Los Angeles.
Wow, and that's... We've seen some.
They are shouting down the coast guy, yelling, "Start the movie!
Oh,
start the movie! Start the movie!" This "start the movie" haranguing went on for 15 minutes, and they kept yelling it.
And due to smooth.
They kept yelling, "Start the movie."
Oh, my.
Like at regular weird intervals, like a barking dog that will not stop barking at nothing. One of them gets up and goes down to one of the publicist girls whose entire job for the night is controlling the flow of people into the reserved section.
Right.
The tape. She's the tape.
Yes.
Picker upper. She picks up the tape to let you in or holds the tape against you and your non-reserved ticket having self.
Right.
They go down and start harassing her.
Oh, brother.
"Who's in charge?" The girl's like, "Not me." "When's the movie gonna start?" "I don't know. We're waiting for people. We're holding it just a little while longer." "This is the most disorganized screening I've ever been to in my entire life. Start the movie!"
Have they ever been to any screening?
Cake Run guy comes back.
Oh, no.
And says, "Anybody need some last minute cake?" They yell at him, "Start the movie!"
Clearly he's in charge.
The movie does not start. The movie continues not to start. And then they start whispering amongst themselves, but in loud voices.
Right.
Because people are still straggling into the auditorium.
Yes.
Sorry, just banged my mic. "You know who they're letting in now, don't you?" "Mm-hmm, I see. I see who, yes. Every piece of trash." I'm scribbling down.
You're in hog heaven.
I know. Scribbling. They're right behind me, and I'm scribbling down everything they say. They let anybody into these screenings when the time is right. you don't even have to have a ticket, probably. They were so upset. We should just leave. You got in for free. You got in for free. You got in for free to a movie that you know is not going to be good at all.
And what's your appointment later?
Yeah, you know? It was the best. Between the Coast... And meanwhile, this entire time, I'm trying to... what I'm trying to convey here is Coast Guy is talking this entire time. Old ladies are yelling this entire time. Cake people are stampeding and also alternately being polite about bringing cake to people who choose not to stampede. Short of the Dirty Dancing Havana Nights salsa dance contest with the guy in the yarmulke, who, by the way, was there.
Of course.
Because that loon is always there.
Oh, that guy.
And he had a marriage story, a funny marriage story to tell. The Coast Guy, and the Coast Guy, not knowing who he was, put the mic right up to his face and said, "My best man didn't bring the ring."
Wow.
And the Coast Guy goes, "Is that the whole story? Is that your story?" "Yes. Thank you so much." This is like going around.
I want to meet that guy's best man.
Yeah.
I want to know who was ever friends with that
guy. Here's what I want. Here's what I want. I want to be a DJ on the coast.
Oh, man.
Oh, I so badly want to be a DJ on the coast. Here's why. Because that way I can always be the person to volunteers to be at these press screenings, to be the host. The coast host.
The coast host.
At these press screens.
With the most.
To smooth things over with cake. Timely film starts. I hit my mic again.
That's not smooth.
No, it's not. And I'll never be hired by the coast because to do this is too hard for an extended period of time.
Yeah, you would have to listen to that music for like 4-hour shifts or whatever. I don't think you can handle that.
I would
read a cooler joke. What am I doing with my life?
I would have to always talk like this. Always.
And listen to Josh Groban.
That would, yeah, it would ruin my entire life. Maybe I would do it for a week. So The Big Wedding sucks, now that we can talk about the film.
I think sucks is maybe a little...
No. No. No.
Okay, in the past, when we have talked about lame comedies, there's a threshold of, like, did I laugh once every 5 minutes? Did I laugh 3 times in the whole movie?
We do discuss laughs per running time.
Right.
I actually just read one of William Bibbiani's reviews this morning where he talks about laughs per running time, too.
Oh, so funny.
Great minds.
There you go. Yeah. I laughed enough times.
All right.
That I recommend this movie for people who have the flu.
Something we've discussed before. Yes. The you're sick on the couch kind of movie.
Right. Yeah. Even though Sandy Bullock is not in this one, I think it still qualifies.
Which means it fails.
Well, I know. Big mistake on their part. But I laughed enough times that I did not leave the theater in a fury. And I was like, well, that was...
I, too, did not leave the theater in a fury. I did not. And I did email you that night and say, my expectations were that it was going to be the most, like, fingernail-pulling, eye-gouging
right.
experience of my year. And it turned out not to be.
No, it is not.
It is not the worst film on earth.
No.
It is...
It's not...
good.
No. Necessarily. But I laughed enough times that I can't totally, you know, crap on it.
I don't even feel like we have to talk about the plot or any really serious details about it.
I have to say,
other than that, it's a big family wedding movie.
Yes.
What it has in its favor is it's rated R.
Yes, so it's
so they body. Say they say bad things,
naughty things.
De Niro says about his ex-wife Diane Keaton pretending that she is still his wife for the sake of the groom's biological mother, who is deeply Catholic, but who also does not understand English. He says, "My wife is one of the great C's of the 19th century." That made me laugh. You know, I always like the C word in a movie.
When wielded correctly.
I especially like it when women say it.
The best.
When Kristen Wiig called the mean girl in Bridesmaids that name,
yeah,
I thought I would pee my pants. it's fine when men say it in films, but it's really great when women say it.
It's like, for me, watching Diane Keaton, Robert De Niro, and Susan Sarandon together in a movie that isn't the worst,
yeah,
it gives me enough pleasure to sort of let me coast over the fact that it's not very interesting or good. And so, you know, I don't know. I was pleasantly sort of like, well, this is not awful.
Another thing it has in its favor is occasionally it flirts with actual reality. Mm. Occasionally, someone will ask a question of another character that would, or should, unravel the entire film.
Right.
Now, it's played off as just a joke, but at least the question is asked. And here's one that I wrote down. Someone says, and I think it might have been Amanda Seyfried talking to
Ben Barnes.
You won't tell a tiny white lie to a priest, but you'll make a farce of our wedding. And I was like, yeah.
That's a script note.
What's going on here? And that was but again, you know, the movie sloughs that off and doesn't take it seriously, or else the film would stop.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we'd all go home. A thing that I like about The Big Wedding is that I think it provides a roadmap
for
Catherine Heigl.
Yes, to maybe say what you're going to say, because I said the same thing in my
review. To be somebody that I might actually ever want to see in a movie again.
Right.
And it's
she is simultaneously the most boring and the most bitchy of the people in the film.
Yes.
Which is a weird road to travel. Yeah. Her character is completely inert and doesn't really have much to do except wander around. But what they have done with her super boring character is given her
rage.
Four or five really mean, sarcastic, bitchy things to say. And she zings him out.
And she gets to tell off Robert De Niro for being such a crappy father. And we'll get to this when we talk about Mud, but we talked about how Matthew McConaughey has really completely rejiggered his entire career from somebody who I just dreaded seeing in movies.
Ghosts of Girlfriends Past.
Exactly.
Fool's Gold.
Yes. How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, Failure to Launch. You know, all those sort of smug, self-satisfied kind of movies.
Right.
And now that he's playing characters that I don't have to like, I love him.
Right.
And I think if Heigl can relieve herself of the burden of being likable in a movie and just
She's not likable at all in anything.
No, she is. Yeah. I think she's up there with Gwyneth Paltrow on the actresses that people hate list.
Right.
So play.
Yeah, but Paltrow's really reinvented herself with the Contagion and the.
I like to think so, but
CeeLo.
But then she puts out a cookbook and undoes everything.
Have you seen that cookbook?
I've read about it.
The cookbook is amazing.
Anyway, if Heigl would be in charge of making people not like her by playing characters that we don't have to like, then I think we would enjoy watching her.
I would enjoy her
in movies.
Yeah, because when it was over, I thought, how is it that Robin Williams was kept on the tightest leash imaginable? Right. And didn't bother me. And Katherine Heigl also did not bother me. In fact, not only did she not bother me. Did I just double negative myself? Anyway, not only did she not bother me, I was kind of into the terrible things that she would say to people.
Yeah.
And that there was this glimpse of a possible future.
Yes. So I cannot crap on this movie. In fact,
I'll crap on it. It's not good.
This is one of the.
It is not a good movie. It's like the most mediocre Cheesecake Factory meal that you've ever had in your life.
Sure, but I didn't give me food poisoning.
Right.
So I gave it a fresh on Rotten Tomatoes because
you did not.
I did, but look, it's again. I don't like the binary. I don't like that there's no middle ground there. I want there to be like a wormy tomato, you know, or a too soft tomato.
Yeah,
or something.
You're a too soft tomato right now.
You know, I just Bibbs also gave it a fresh, by the way.
So is he.
But you know,
speaking of, he's not going to be at Iron Man 3 tonight.
Uh huh.
But if he were, I'm putting you both on notice. After Oblivion, and I know he's going to listen to this, so I'm just telling you both right now. Uh-huh. I want it to be a matter of public record. Mm-hmm. I'm separating you two.
No, you can go sit somewhere
else.
For
the rest of your lives.
You're not the boss of us.
I am separating you two. You,
if it bugs you, you go sit somewhere else.
Sit there next to each other going, tee-heeing and pointing at things and stuff. You're done.
You know what? Because he's deaf. He's not deaf like you. So I can actually say, I can whisper things in the movie and have them be heard.
I'm the human shield now between you two. I'm done.
You are not in charge of anything.
You guys have pushed me too far.
You go eat some more raspberry custard cookies. I'm not. And leave Bibbs and me alone.
No. It's this bromance is done. The boy is mine, said Monica to Brandy.
You don't want to get into this competition.
I'm sorry that you seem to be confused.
Uh-huh. I don't think you want to set up an ultimatum here.
When I sit next to Bibbs, he behaves himself. More or less. When I sit next to you, you more or less behave yourself. So I'm going to sit next to both of you in between you so they all both behave.
Fine.
Behaving. There's going to be some behaving that starts today. Next week, because he's already seen Iron Man.
I will lean down and let the sound waves bounce off your guts and go to him. It'll be like being in the Echo Caverns. So, yeah. You're in charge of nothing, Dave White. Mud.
We're doing Mud this week?
Yeah.
All right. The story I told was so long that it's either going to be Mud or the really long letter. Let's do it Mud. We'll do Mud. We'll do the really long letter next time.
With the other two movies and with Iron Man 3.
All right.
Not much next week.
Okay.
Mud.
It's yours.
Okay, fine. Do Mud. It is from the writer-director of Take Shelter, Jeff Nichols, and it stars Matthew McConaughey, as we mentioned. It's about these two teenage, 14-year-old boys in Arkansas living on the Mississippi River. One of them is played by Ty Sheridan. From The Tree of Life. He was the youngest kid of Brad Pitt and Jessica Chastain. And so he and his friend Neckbone, which is my favorite movie character name of the year so far.
That's a really good name.
Neckbone knows about a motorboat that is in a tree in this island, out in the middle of the river from some flood that washed it there.
Right.
So they go to check it out. They've got big plans for
somebody's knocking on our door.
All right, do you want me to pause?
Pause it.
Thank you, Federal Express. Okay, so they go to check out this boat, and there's someone living there, and it's Matthew McConaughey.
He is the Mud.
He is Mud, and his name is Mud, and he is a fugitive, as it turns out. He killed a man who did a terrible thing to the love of his life.
Juniper,
thank you.
Played by Reese Witherspoon.
Yes. And so the two young boys kind of get enmeshed in Mud and Juniper's stuff and try to help them out. And, lessons are learned and, the big scary world of adulthood is sort of
revealed,
broached and revealed for the first time.
Yeah.
And, it's really lovely for most of the running time. It really, we talked already about that was the Summer That Changed Everything movie, and this falls into that category. And it has a very, it's over 2 hours long, but it's one of those movies that I appreciated that they took their time and sort of let things kind of unfold in a sort of lazy, summary kind of way. And, there's all For the lead kid, for the Ty Sheridan character, he really needs to invest in the Mud Juniper romance because his parents are on the verge of getting a divorce, and he's in love with this popular girl at school, but she sort of leads him on, and then
she's not nice to him, right?
All of which is really terrific, and I really like it a lot. And Michael Shannon, who has been in both of the writer-director's other films, has a small role as Neckbone's uncle. And if you want to see Michael Shannon in a movie in which he is not, twitchy or killy or, crazy, this would be the one that I can think of offhand.
Right. He does not do his patented crazy eyes
yes.
in this film. He's actually really funny in this
movie. He is. He's charming.
Yeah.
I think where the movie goes astray is there's all these things that happen towards the end.
Right.
In my review,
too many things.
Yeah. In my review, I said it was like if To Kill a Mockingbird got script notes and there needed to be a motorboat chase.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
you know here you've got like there's gunshots and you know there's people being rushed to the hospital and just stuff and stuff.
Other events.
Yeah. And speeches where the kids who have been very realistically 14 up until this point are suddenly like. Explaining what the movie's about, you know, and being very, very accurate about what their own feelings are about the things that have transpired.
Yeah,
that's a little bit of a letdown, but but it's worth seeing because all the stuff leading up to that part is so good.
I actually, you know, all that stuff that I didn't like at the end, it's entirely forgivable.
Yeah,
because everything else is so great.
Yes,
and so I think it's less successful than Take Shelter. It's less contained.
Sure.
And Take Shelter. It has more. It wants to be bigger,
right?
When it probably should have
focused
inward a little more. But fine. You know, I'm okay with it detouring down that road,
right?
What I love about this director is that
Jeff Nichols. If I didn't say that,
we did. I think we did say his name. Yeah. What I love about him is his approach to rural characters.
Mm.
As a person who grew up in small towns and among, you know, blue-collar folks who weren't always fully educated, movies are horrible to those people. Movies are really horrible to those people.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not talking about comedies. Like, Waiting for Guffman is a comedy.
Right.
And it mocks them. But that's the point of it. The point is mocking stupidity in that film. But in a movie where mocking stupidity isn't supposed to be the agenda.
Right.
That's always what happens.
Yeah, they're either morons or they're wise.
Yeah, there's no middle ground.
Yeah.
And these are just folks. And I really like that it's respectful and it's real. And if he stays in that world, if he stays in the world of, you know, go nowhere kind of towns, then he will make a really great movie eventually. Mm. Right now he's made, you know, really good one and one pretty good one.
And you know, he's got a movie before Take Shelter.
Yes.
That I've never seen.
So he's made three, and I haven't seen the other one. So,
no, I thought maybe you'd seen it, because I had
not. But the, I really, really, really like this. It is the best movie to come out this week.
Sure, yes, yeah. No question. Yeah. I mean, I could have seen a whole movie about the parents.
Right.
Because we really just kind of get sidelong, like, we don't know much more than the kid knows.
Right.
You know, but I, you know, they're so, it's Sarah Paulson and I forget the actor's name who plays the dad. He was in that Oscar-winning short, The Accountant, and he's been in a bunch of stuff. He's an Atlanta-based actor. You know, those, their moments were so just, they felt very lived in. And you could, you know, what they weren't saying but conveying to each other about the state of their relationship and where they each wanted to go from there with their lives. You know, yeah, I found all that really compelling.
So, yeah, if you want to see some hicks that aren't the worst human beings alive, here you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, so my DVD pick, as mentioned, is Ramin Barani's Chop Shop.
Did I pick a DVD?
Dude, I asked you about this before we taped, and you were like, oh, let me look, and you were telling me about things that were coming out in May.
Oh, wait, you know what? I got sidetracked on picking my DVD, because I saw that The Guilt Trip is coming out this week.
Yes.
And I had a bit of a dilemma with do I recommend that or not? Because I may have to go back and watch it again in the future.
Uh-huh.
To really determine if I feel that affection for it still, the farther I get away from my own mother's death.
Right.
Because if you recall, yes. I gave it a good review, and I remember when we walked out of the screening that night, I just said, that movie made me miss my mother. Mm-hmm. And I was getting kind of choked up about it.
Yeah, no, I remember.
And because it is a film about a guy and his mother on a road trip.
Right.
It's Seth Rogen and Barbra Streisand. And it's a very broad, you know, kind of comedy.
Yeah.
It's not personal or intimate or smart or anything like that. It's just not terrible.
Right.
It's better than The Big Wedding.
Yes.
But it's still in that middle ground of, you know.
But again.
Is it super funny? No.
But again, also.
Is it sweet and affectionate? Absolutely yes.
And it's another movie that is better than you think it's going to be based on the, you know,
right.
what you know about it. So.
So that's where I got sidetracked on picking because I thought, wait, do I pick something else? And then we started the show and I forgot to pick a DVD. Let's make that my DVD pick. You go at your own risk with the guilt trip. If your mom just died, you might really like it because it'll make you miss your mommy. Just totally what happened to me.
That's the demo they're going after on this one, I think.
Do you miss your mommy? You will like the guilt trip. I miss my mommy. So I may always have a softy spot for that. Mm-hmm. You know, you never know.
No, you will recall, you know, when I saw Ken Loach's Land and Freedom, which
I was there when you saw Land and Freedom.
Well, no, that was I'd seen it once before. I saw it sitting next to a stranger at the Toronto Film Festival and was
crying like a baby,
weeping at the end of it. And she took me to lunch, and then then we watched it again later on DVD, and I did it again. That's a movie. It never got a US DVD release, unfortunately, but it's a movie that makes me think about my dad. So
all right, here's a letter.
Oh, we have time for one? Okay.
We don't have time for one, but let's just have one anyway.
Okay,
I'm only going to read one.
Okay.
Well, I'll read two. There's a real short one.
Okay.
From Daniel that says, I was just listening to the episode of Popcorn Mafia.
Oh, wow.
Where you talked about Santa Claus.
Ah.
The damned have jazz hands should be on a t-shirt.
Agreed.
That's what he says. Okay, so the long letter, well, not the long letter, but the next long letter, and this is the only one I'm going to read,
okay,
is from Julian.
Okay.
Dear Mr. Duralde and Mr. White, I have listened to the Linoleum Knife podcast with a vigilant metronomic regularity. That sentence is metronomic. With a vigilant metronomic regularity since its inception.
Wow.
From the beginning. Or as I like to say, the get-go.
Somebody got a word day calendar.
I listen. You don't know. Maybe he always talks like
maybe
this.
Maybe he does.
He might be a smart person.
True.
Maybe he's smarter than you and me.
But he's listening to this show, so.
He can't be that smart. No. He's listening to this show. I listen to virtually dozens of American movie podcasts, and yours is certainly one of the best.
Oh.
I think so.
Certainly, sure.
I'm obsessed with this one movie podcast right now that we cannot name.
Oh, God.
It just started about six, 8 months ago, this movie podcast that I refuse to name because it would be cruel.
Yes, it would be.
It is the worst, most boring thing I've ever listened to in my life, and I hate it, and I keep listening to it just to see if they're ever going to get better or if they could actually become worse.
Have they plateaued?
Not yet.
Okay.
And so... yeah, that's my current obsession. Okay. He says, I listen. Ours is one of the best. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Two film critics with a similar attitude to what cinema should be, bickering about the films they saw that week, that encompass both the mainstream and peculiar world, has been the cinema's most stimulating catalyst for taking it seriously from Siskel and Ebert on.
All right.
Apparently that's us.
I guess it is.
I hope you are aware of the amount of joy the podcast brings to people all over the world like me. We are now.
Yeah.
Even seemingly minor things are, in reality, quite affecting. Like Mr. White's giddy... I'm reading this cold. Like Mr. White's giddy adoration for Robert Bresson, or Mr. Duralde's insightful attitude on always loving a movie because you love it and never just because everyone else does.
Yeah.
Please don't stop doing the show, for it would be a great loss.
Wow. Thanks.
I am a film critic living in Sydney, Australia, working for various very non-profile publications. But I do have my own website called The Cinema Touch. Someone I cinema touched.
I think he's putting the cinema touch on us.
It can be found at thecinematouch.blogspot.com. Look, here's the thing. You want to promote your cinema blog spot? Go ahead. Just butter us up just like that. Pour some sugar on us.
Talk real pretty. That's
all that matters. Yeah. We'll get you, we'll give you anything you need. Talk smoothly, softly, and sweetly to us. Tell us how great we are.
Speak low.
Yeah. Let's link him up on the Facebook.
Sure, yeah.
He said he will not be offended if we don't take a peek, but we're gonna. Okay. Here's my standard top 10 alphabetized, please grade. Aguirre, Wrath of God.
Sure.
Yes.
Great, yeah.
Day for Night.
Great.
Yes. The Lady Vanishes. Yes.
Yes.
The Magnificent Ambersons.
Yes.
Yes. The Night of the Hunter.
Yes.
Dreyer's Passion of Joan of Arc.
Yes. Yes.
Spirited Away.
Yes.
Throne of Blood.
Yes.
Trouble in Paradise. My number one of all time.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. And Viridiana.
Wow.
Yes.
You are clearly.
Dude, that's the easiest 100%.
Yeah. Please. Those are all
unassailable.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there you go. That's your 100% knife, Julian. We're going to post your link on the thing and
on our Facebook page.
We love you the way you love us. And for anyone else who wants to love us in that way,
drop us a line at linoleumpodcast.
We will love you in the same way.
linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Send us your own top 10 list and all the compliments you can cram into an
email. We don't mind ones that are lies.
Yes. But and we'll even read your constructive criticism on the air.
No, we will not.
All right, so thank you, as always, for listening, and we, as always, will point you to our friends in the podcast universe, The Comedy Couch with Dennis Hensley and Tony Tripoli.
I really wish I could point people to the one that I hate, but there's no good way to do that.
You'd be nice.
I know.
Cooking with Malcolm Ingram, Fat Guys of the Movies, The Criterion Cast, Throwing Shade, Team Jack, The Schmoes Know, The B-Movies Podcast, Film Spotting SVU, Pod Crash, Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid. None of those podcasts are the ones that Dave is talking about.
No, of course.
Okay.
No.
Just wanted to be double sure on that one, that people knew that. You can download this program for free at iTunes, and if you want to leave us a positive review there, that would be great. It helps other people find the show. You can stream the show at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com. We ask that you please like our Facebook page for Linoleum Knife Podcast.
Do it.
Follow us on Twitter.
Because the podcast that I hate has a lot of likes on Facebook.
We're always competing.
Makes me mad.
Follow us on Twitter at LinoleumCast. You can check into the show at GetGlue.com.
I'm competitive. And I don't have low testosterone.
And again, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. So yeah, next week, Iron Man 3.
Yeah.
And the Another movies we didn't get to this week. And sorry that we were late this week, but I just got back from Dallas. And
right.
Boy, is my brain tired.
Yeah.
Okay, till next time. Bye.
Goodbye.